Thomas Lewis Hardin was born in 1916. His father was an Episcopal minister who frequently changed parishes. When he was 16, Hardin was blinded for life after hammering at a dynamite cap that blew up in his face. 11 years later, Hardin moved to New York City to pursue a career as a composer. Robert Scotto is the author of the authorized biography of Thomas Lewis Hardin, alias Moondog, and the book is called Moondog, the Viking of Sixth Avenue. So when did Hardin reinvent himself as Moondog, the striking figure who dressed like a Viking and performed on the streets of New York City?
1947, he has an exact date, an exact memory, because when he and his father went to Hurley, Missouri, a dog came with the farm that they bought, and this dog, Lindy, would howl at the moon. And Moondog had been in New York for 4 years, and he really hadn't been getting anywhere. He'd been, you know, starting to reach audiences and going to parties. He was a strikingly physically gorgeous man, so he was making some money by being a model. But it didn't seem as if anything was going one day. So one day he went down to his neighbors and said, "I am Moondog." He took the name from his dog that howled at the moon. He was unaware that Moondog has a number of connotations in various mythologies. It was really a local choice rather than a symbolic one, I think. And interestingly enough, the first record he ever cut was called Moondog Symphony, and it has the dog howling at the moon as part of the music. And this was the record that Alan Freed used to start his show in New York City, which is the law case in the 50s that was so interesting.
"I do not dress as I do to attract attention. I attract attention because I dress as I do."
I'm curious about this Viking helmet that he wore. Was there any significance to that? Why? Where did it come from?
Well, of all of the anomalies that I had to account for in the book, this is the one that created the biggest problem. Because here is someone who looks like almost a comic image of someone, you know, a parody of a Viking. By the way, the Vikings never wore horns, and when he went to Sweden later on in his life, he wasn't allowed to wear them because it wasn't considered authentic. But how do you account for this outfit? And I think the only way to account for it, if we want to believe that here's a serious man who was a serious artist, or at least someone who wanted to be a serious artist, was that it went along with his development of ideas, and in particular his methods of composing music. What he wanted to do was to do two things simultaneously, was to write in conventional Western music tradition, but to bring to it a sense of excitement, a sense of novelty, and which of course all composers want to, but to do this by more or less undercutting the authority of these traditions while at the same time adhering to them. So he always worked with canons. He always worked with madrigals. He always wrote in couplets because these were recognized forms.
Using traditional music, but what he did with them was different.
Transform them. And I think what happened was the image of the Viking, that is the pre-Christian culture, held a great deal of appeal to him because he hated Christianity. At that point, not only because of his father's failures, but also because he was convinced, and not without a good deal of reason, that too much of our political structure is actually undermined by Christian morals, which he considered a violation of legitimate government. So one way of establishing his credentials was to take a stance that was pre-Christian, and which marked him off as a critic of contemporary society, while at the same time establishing the fact that he was attached to the past and not simply a maverick.
Well, no wonder he was popular among so many people in the late 1960s. Which is actually, you said, when you met him, right?
Yes. First time I saw him, yes.
And you heard him perform then. How would you describe Moondog's music?
Well, one of the interesting things about the book is that it includes a CD, and the CD is about an hour's worth of music that more or less covers the entire 50-year career, that gives you a sense of his development, even if it's, you know, 0.1% of all that he ever wrote. But his earliest works were almost entirely percussion-oriented, or they took their inspiration from street sounds, the subway, a fog horn in the Hudson, someone tap dancing, etc., and overlaid that with some form of canonic music. They tended to be relatively simple, sometimes jazz-inflected, sometimes Latin-inflected, but recognizably different. I don't think you can hear anything by Moondog without noticing that this is just slightly off-center. There's something about it that is unlike anything that came before.
Yeah. It has that odd rhythm. He called it, I think you said it was...
Snake time.
Can you explain snake time
Tempo
rhythm?
Di serpente. Snake time. He described it as a slithery rhythm in times that were not ordinary. He said at one point, I'm not going to die in 4/4 time. So he would write in odd rhythms. And sometimes these rhythms, because of the odd percussive instruments that he created, had a feel of something moving dynamically in a different way than ordinary music.
It's fascinating because you feel as though you're in the rhythm, and then it does something that isn't. And then you sort of adjust your listening to that, and then he changes it on you again.
Yes. He wrote in all of these strange signatures. He was angry when, not angry, he was moderately upset when Janis Joplin recorded All His Loneliness in 4/4 time, because it's written in 4/5 time.
Yeah.
And he thought that all that did was it made it a rock and roll song rather than an interesting and unusual madrigal.
It's fascinating. That one in particular caught my attention because there's a kind of poignancy to it in his performance of it.
Yes. He has a couple of early madrigals. That's one. Why Spend the Dark Night with You is another, that are extremely sad. Because remember, this is someone who, until his marriage in the mid-50s, essentially lived a decade on his own in New York City from his mid-20s to his mid-30s alone. So there's a great deal of, the perfect word is poignancy in some of his early music, because it is something of a cry of the heart that this is a man who had a great deal to offer but didn't seem to be making the right contact.
He is a study in contrasts, isn't he? He's homeless in New York, and then you toss off that he was married, and he has a daughter. In fact, I think he has a couple of daughters, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, too.
And he lived in the wedded state for 8 years or so.
Yes.
And yet most of his life he was homeless.
Most of his life he was homeless. And even when he was married, those 8 years, he lived 4 of those years in the Fleabag Hotel, where his daughter was born, that he had lived in and flopped down in for 10 or more of his years in New York City. Wow. His mind contained many contradictions. He's kind of an avatar of Walt Whitman. You know, I contradict myself. Well, very well, I contradict myself. He loved paradox. He liked to deal with things in tension.
Well, it was a good thing that he loved paradox, because he encountered a lot of it. He really suffered for his art.
Oh, he did.
What's curious is that with all of this going on, he managed to compose so much. How did he do that?
It's all of a piece when you look at it from, you know, hindsight. Because he was blind, he had to compose in Braille. It was very expensive to translate whatever he composed in Braille into some kind of written script, whether it was music, notation, or print, because very few people were capable of doing that, and very few people were capable of working at the rates that Moondog could afford to pay. And in addition to that, he had his own idiosyncratic notations, especially with his music. So he was literally forced to compose complete works that would fit on one page. So a canon, for instance, and a madrigal could fit on one page. A couplet or several could fit on one page. And from this, he would build more complex works.
But he did stand up for himself. You've mentioned the famous DJ case, the Alan Freed case, who called himself Moondog, and Moondog got upset about it.
Very upset. What happened was Alan Freed came from Cleveland, where he had been a hotshot, and was signed by WINS in New York to do the latest kids show. And he took the Moondog Symphony that I mentioned earlier, the first record that Moondog ever cut, and used that as his calling card. And he called his show the Moondog Show, and he had his Moondoggers and Moon Puppies, and had built an entire industry almost overnight, which was dependent upon this image. Well, Moondog, of course, was very upset and took him to court. He didn't necessarily think he was going to win because he was, of course,
a homeless guy on Sixth Avenue, this is Alan Freed.
Yes, and so at first the judge was, dismissive, this is nonsense. But all of a sudden, Moondog was able to bring into court or to have people write testimony that this was a serious composer. I mean, among these, Benny Goodman and Arturo Toscanini. So the judge all of a sudden looked at Moondog in a new light, and he won the case. He didn't get much money, but Alan Freed was forced to apologize on the air and to no longer use the Moondog name. And this is the birth of rock and roll. The rock and roll show came about because of a Moondog lawsuit.
I'm curious, for you, if you were to get just one piece of Moondog's that you wanted to listen to. I don't care about making him popular for the ages. Mm-hmm. If there's one piece of Moondog's that you want to listen to, what would it be?
If I had to pick one piece, it would be Theme. Theme and Variations, or Theme. It's a work that he first recorded in the 50s, in which he played all of the parts, and which is one of the signature pieces on his Columbia album, and which has been recorded again in Europe with big band and sax packs. It's a marvelous, very elegant canon of many voices and lovely rhythms, but it's the one piece that I think of all of his orchestral pieces sums up his work. But of course, he wrote for piano, for organ, he wrote for various, and the voice for the madrigals. So I guess I would have to say Theme, but then I would have to have a footnote. And the footnote would include about 100 other pieces.
Robert Scotto is the author of Moondog, The Viking of Sixth Avenue.